I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. I have the pleasure today of talking with artist Gavin Bernard. Gavin, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Floyd?
Doing very well. What's new in your world these days?
Projects, multiple projects. I have my own company with a business partner, Lisa. It's called Graphite. I have a light fixture I'm working on with another friend, Suzuko. So my plate's a little full, but good. It's a good full.
Talk about early on. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in England. I was born and raised in a small town called Wolverhampton. It's in the Midlands. I moved to New York when I was about 7 years old. Stayed with my grandma and my parents before we moved to Queens. I was there for a couple of years, and then my parents sent me back to England to go to school. I was being a little bit of a bad boy at that time. So I did a little bit of traveling when I was younger, back and forth between the States and England, before I ended up in Atlanta 98, I came here summer of 98.
So do you have a favorite football team that you support back in England?
Of course I do. Arsenal football team, London. They're the best football team in the world. I watch them regularly. That's my only, I don't really watch TV or do anything, but I will make time. I will always make time for my football team.
So where do you watch Arsenal matches in Atlanta?
A couple of places. I used to go to the Brew House a lot to watch them. I stream most of the games now. It's just easier with work. I can multitask that. But if it's a big game, if I'm not going to a friend's house, I'll go to the Brew House and watch it.
But you got to be happy that NBC
Has
now brought EPL action to the States.
Yes, I'm quite happy about that. They actually show all the games. It makes it extremely easy for me to watch them while I'm working. It's funny. I have three or four friends, which we have a Twitter/texting going whenever the games are on. So it's a constant feed of information. So even if I forgot that there's a game going on, they will quickly let me know. So it's been good. It's definitely been good.
So your football club, Arsenal, the Gunners.
The Gunners.
What do they have to do to get over both Manchester clubs as well as Chelsea, you know, to capture the hearts and minds of the EPL? I guess the Barclays Premier League. So it's BPL. But as far as the EPL is concerned, what does Arsenal have to do to leapfrog at least both of the Manchester clubs? Also, Liverpool doing quite well.
Liverpool's doing quite well. Just so that you know, Arsenal is in first place at the moment. So we're doing a pretty good job. We bought one of the premier midfielders from Spain, Ozil. And he's definitely helped us improve this season. So I think it was a confidence issue with our team. And I think we've started to overcome that this year. Most of the other major teams have gone through some managerial changes, so they're not up to par the way they used to be. So we have that stability, we have that creativity. So I'm really thinking we're going to do well this year. I'm expecting some kind of silverware.
It does seem like with the changes at Manchester United that the top slot is up for grabs.
Yes, it is.
But speaking about creativity, because I think the one thing that always strikes me when I watch football, world football matches, for our American fans out there, world football matches, is this sense of creativity on the pitch.
Yes.
What informs your sense of creativity?
You know what? It's actually similar to football, in the sense that you can be an individual player with great skill. But it's a team effort. And for me, I get my inspiration a lot of times from the people I work with. I have my varied sets of skills, which have carried me to the point I'm at now. But there's a lot I don't know. And I'm lucky and happy that I have a very close friend group, which are extremely talented in a lot of various ways, and that inspire me and help me to think differently and to see things differently. So that's definitely helped for me to grow as a artist and as a person too. So I think my friend group is key to my success.
To stay on the football analogy, in American sports, the folks who score the most points are often the more celebrated athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like that's sometimes the case in football, but the midfielder is often more valued than strikers.
Yeah.
Is there an analogy to that in the art world or in your world in terms of being a good midfielder versus being a striker, or knowing how to be a striker when it's necessary or being a midfielder when it's necessary?
Yeah. The strikers are all flash, you know, they're the end product. But there's a lot of work that goes in beforehand to get to the point where someone puts that final touch to get the ball in the back of the net. So for being an artist or designer, for me, it's all about the process, the work up to the showing, which is the most important. So that's why, you know, I value midfielders for that. They are creative. They have to see those gaps where they can pass the ball. They have to envision two or three steps ahead of what the play is going to be. And being an artist or a designer, there's always problems that need to be solved before the final result. So, there's a definite value in being a midfielder. And most of my favorite, except for Thierry Henry, which is my all-time favorite football player, he was a striker, but he had the mind of a midfielder.
Speaking of Henry, have you followed much of his career since he's come to the States?
Yeah.
And how would you assess that so far?
It's a difficult market in New York. I think he's done a great job because he's kind of had to reinvent himself as he's gotten older. But the skill's still there. He's still Thierry Henry. There's no mistaking his brilliance. But U.S. is a different market. The same thing with David Beckham when he came here. It took him a while to adjust to it before he actually started winning some silverware. So I think it's more about getting people into the game and having them realize or see the skill and the potential of the game. I'm also waiting to find that American football player that's going to take it by storm, like the Kobe of soccer. That will take it to the next level here.
Well, I think it was a promising move when Clint Dempsey decided to come back and play.
Yes.
That was a statement, if you will.
Yeah. Clint's a boss. He's a boss. I loved watching him in the Premiership. He has that swagger about him. And I think to be an American star in whatever sport you play, you have to have that swag. Besides the skill to back it up, that's like necessary. And he definitely has that. And I think he's underrated for how good he is and how much he's contributed to the American team. So he's a good player.
Is Lionel Messi really that good?
Yes.
Can you explain how or why? Like, I guess I see the stats, right?
Yeah.
All the goals scored.
Yeah.
I see some of the highlights, but if you could put it into words, how is he that much superior to everyone else?
When you watch Messi play, he makes the game look simple. He makes it like, oh, I could do that. And you can't do that. No one can do what he does. He will go by three or four players. He will turn on a dime. He makes everyone look like they're moving in slow motion. So for his brain to be moving that quickly, to be in that sync with his teammates, it's kind of breathtaking. You know, you see Cristiano Ronaldo play and it's different. He's more powerful. He's, he moves with a strength. Messi's just very fluid. He's more like water. It's effortless with Messi, and it's weird to be living now with two amazing soccer players like that, which you can watch on a daily basis. You know, you hear about it in the past. My dad used to tell me about Pelé and about Maradona and about all these older players, and it's like I'm envisioning what he's saying, but to actually see it on a day-to-day basis is pretty awesome.
So in your own travels,
mm-hmm.
going from England and that culture,
yeah,
and as we just talked about the soccer / world football culture, I mean that's life.
It there. Is.
And your time now in America, from New York and Queens, and then coming down to Atlanta, where is home for you now?
Home is Atlanta. It took me a while to figure that out, but home is Atlanta. I've been. Besides, I spent some time in Toronto. I love Toronto. It's an amazing city. New York, amazing city. London, amazing city. But Atlanta's my home, mainly because of the people I met here. They've really helped to shape me as an individual. And I see the growth in Atlanta. I want to be a part of that. And in other cities, New York... So you kind of just live in awe of what the city is. In Atlanta, it's having that opportunity to be a part of that change. Sometimes it's frustrating, but there's a beauty to it. Kind of being like a pioneer. So Atlanta's become my home. And those changes have been actually happening pretty quickly. So I'm happy to be there and to be... Even if it's a little part that I'm able to influence, I'm totally on board.
So let's talk about that. You're a part of a creative team,
mm-hmm.
Graphite Inc.
Yeah.
What is your vision for that company?
Graphite Inc. is actually one of a couple of things I'm working on, but for Graphite, it's being able to offer a different type of design to our clients. Me and my business partner, Lisa, we come from a background in retail, mostly at Anthropologie and some other places. And through working specifically at Anthro, we learned a different way of using aesthetics to create a vibe within a space. And it can be done on a budget. It can be done very simply. But what we want to offer to Atlanta, which at the time there wasn't that many places around that had a very distinct look. So as soon as you walk into an environment, you can smell it. You can hear it. You can see it. You kind of get it. It's calm. It's welcoming. And we want to offer that to different businesses, retail, commercial, residential, just a different way about thinking about design and having it be a little bit more approachable, more fun, adding an artistic twist to it. So I think that's what we try to offer.
And you mentioned that was just one of a few projects that you were involved in.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, Graphite's the main project. I'm working on a talk show focusing on Atlanta-based artists or just people around town. It's called Thank You for Stopping By. Also part of a art collective group. It's four of us. It's called The Archivist. And that centers around... we're just starting off, and that's more based on just trying to see how we can help to impact the art scene in Atlanta. Right now we're doing it through conversation. There's four members in the group. And it's actually fun having these open conversations about art in Atlanta and how it can be improved, how we can make an impact. The four members in the group have different backgrounds, which I think give us a little bit more of a better idea of how to appeal to everyone. And that's been fun. And then I'm working on a side project with another friend where we're making our light fixtures. So I'm just trying to, I'm doing a lot of different things. But I think where we're all at in the world today is like we have so many different ideas in our head. There's no reason why we can't touch on all of them. And if it can all become a reality, why not make that happen? So
I think to be an artist in our current society, you have to have a certain amount of fearlessness. And I wanted to get a sense of your fearlessness as it relates to your art and the things that you have managed to pursue or bring into your world. What was your experience like taking part in Dance Chance Atlanta?
Dance Chance Atlanta was a amazing experience for me. I've always been into dance. It's been one of my first loves, dance and music. So when Maggie told me to come check out Dance Chance for the first time, I really didn't know what I was getting into. Watching the performances blew me away. I wasn't aware that I was actually signing up for the possibility of being in the next Dance Chance. But when they picked my name out of a hat, I was all for it. It was funny. There was a couple of weeks ago, I was actually a couple of weeks before the actual Dance Chance that I attended. I heard a piece of music and it just got me in this frame of mind, which, oh, I'd love to do a performance with that. Never really thought about it before. So it kind of felt fated when it happened that I should be doing this. And there wasn't really a fear behind, geez, I've never really performed in front of someone else before. It was more so, man, this is something I'd really love to do. So let me kind of grasp it and see how far I can take it. Once again, I was blessed that I have a really good friend who's a choreographer who helped me with the whole process. But there was no real fear behind doing the performance up until the day of when I did the first run through. I was a little bit scared because you just don't know how people are going to take your work. And we did the first test. There was a couple of people in the room. Everyone clapped. They seemed to love it. So it took away the nerves. So when I actually did the performance, it was I was able to really get within the piece, get within the moment. I think it really brought something out of me. Something that I didn't know was there, that performance side. There's something to be said about being able to speak to people through movement without saying a word and for them to get you. And I haven't experienced that before. So I can see that being very addictive. So even now I'm thinking, I'm talking with my friend who helped me with a choreography about possibly doing another performance or coming up with ideas. The world is so open now and we have access to so much. And I know you coming from, we're that same generation, that transitional generation between, we went all the way from vinyl to MP3s. I think we have more of appreciation for what we didn't have. And now that we have that access, being able to take it and roll with it and see how far we can push it. So
whether it's dance, whether it's your work with graphite, whether it's your design work with the light fixtures, or just anything, whether it's drawing or writing, whatever you find yourself doing, when are you at your best creatively?
When am I at my best creatively? It's funny, sometimes in the car or in the shower, it's those quiet moments where I have a second to think, and I'm always thinking. I'm a very social person, but at the same time, I'm a very quiet person, and most of the time in my own head, so I'm constantly thinking over ideas or concepts, and it's those quiet moments where I have a chance to mull something over or even not think, and then it kind of just pops into my head. Those work the best for me. And then taking those ideas and collaborating with friends, and then something else will pop up through conversation. Actually, that happens a lot, where it's this moment where someone might say something and it kind of clicks. So usually what I do sometimes is I either jot things down or I tend to record my conversations, because since I'm always thinking within the conversation, sometimes I might miss something. I'll go back and listen to it, and it will spur something else. So, but most of the time it's when I'm by myself.
Last question. If you could choose one and have only one, winning the premiership or winning the Champions League for your Arsenal Gunners?
I would say Champions League, because we haven't won the Champions League. We've won the premiership. Info premiership is big. I would say Champions League. There's Champions League is the world. It's the best team in Europe. Which, let's be honest, the best team in Europe is probably going to be the best team in the world. So, and you're going up against all the top guns. So, to win that would be special. So, yes, Champions League.
Gavin Bernard, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Floyd.